You're listening to Podcast on Fire. It's Asian cinema in a podcast with your hosts, the magnificent trio of Stu, Ken, and Mike.
Hello and welcome to Podcast on Fire, episode 87. I'm your host, Stuart Sutherland, and joining me this evening, we've got Ken.
Hey.
And we've got Mike.
Evening.
Yes. Yeah, he's excited.
Excited, Mike, as we know him.
Incredibly.
Yes, that's what I like.
It's just like old days.
Woo.
So, last movies watched. Mike, you should have a fucking lot of Korean movies to talk about.
I have no Korean movies to talk about. I told you last time I was on the show. It's actually
Expectations. More
difficult to watch a Korean film in Korea than it is in the UK. Well, with English subtitles anyway. Even though pretty much all Korean DVDs have English subtitles, it's really hard to find a DVD store to buy from.
Okay, did you at least see Shrek 4?
No, of course not. I don't like the Shrek films.
Toy Story 3?
Yep, of course.
Ah, that's good. Okay, right.
Toy Story 3 was amazing. Best one of the three.
Did you see anything else, Mike?
Well,
recently.
On the flight over to England, I watched The Legend is Born, Ip Man. I don't know if it's Ip Man, The Legend is Born, or Legend is Born, Ip Man, but that's what the selector thing on the plane said. Now, have either of you seen it?
I've got a copy of it, but I've just never got around to watching it.
Not yet. Okay. I've not seen neither the Donnie Yen ones or this, but I will probably go for this first because I'm a fan of the director, Herman Yao.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen the Donnie Yen Ip Man films either, because, well, I saw a few little snippets of Ip Man in the trailer, but didn't really like the look of it, to be honest. But I'll probably get around to watching it one day. I mean, it's just so cheap on DVD in the UK and Blu-ray.
And it's everywhere now. I mean, it has releases everywhere.
Yeah, I think Ip Man 2 is just coming out in America, is it? The cinema, short cinema run maybe or something?
There's a DVD and Blu-ray announced as well, so it's spreading.
Ah, the UK's got its release in March as well.
There we go. Yeah, so I watched that. Obviously, as Ken just said, directed by Herman Yao. Got Sammo in it, little more than a cameo, to be honest. Yuen Biu, who's in it for quite a bit. Fan Siu Wong, and some dude who's playing Ip Man, who actually resembles Donnie Yen a little bit. I don't know who he is.
Good marketing. But,
yeah, well, he does possess, I guess, around about 70% of the smug levels of Donnie Yen. So it's pretty good that it's a... I don't know if he's holding back a bit of smugness because it's a prequel, so, you know, he's like a lesser version.
Hasn't yet developed into
Donnie Light.
Yeah, exactly. He's got another 30% to go. Yeah, he's pretty smug. Sammo, I believe, did the choreography for this as well.
I think maybe assisting alongside Tony Leung Siu Hong. Mike Lee spoke about Tony Leung assisted on Ip Man but didn't do Ip Man 2 because he went on to do this Ip Man instead. So main action director might be Tony Leung and Sammo assisting or sharing the duties.
Yeah, well, it was Wing Chun and Sammo was there, so I kind of put two and two together. I didn't actually bother doing any research.
Sure. Well, you didn't have the fucking credits in front of you when you did your little selecting thing, so no worry.
Yeah. Yeah, and so Sammo, a bit more of the cameo, he kind of dies off at the beginning. Basically, we have Ip Man's dad takes Ip Man and his adopted brother to Sammo and says, teach them Wing Chun. He starts learning Wing Chun and Sammo pops his clogs. It's not really that much of a spoiler because it happens in the first few minutes of the film. And then he's taught, Yuen Biu takes over the teaching of the school. And then you get like them training over the years and brotherly relationship between Fan Siu Wong and Min was pretty much nothing. And the drama wasn't really enough, Donny. And that's pretty much it. Those evil Japs, those Japanese get in there. And, you know, those Japanese. and they have a bit of a scrap. Yeah, it's not really that much plot-wise. To be honest, didn't really like it.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was, the story and to carry it, I mean, that doesn't, well, you could say, well, you know, the story, the drama and everything like that, and acting isn't too hot in old school Shaw Brothers Kung Fu. But they know how, well, one, that was like 30 odd years ago. And two, usually that's chock full of high quality action. This wasn't, I didn't feel. It was kind of good, but never got to the point where, apart from a few moments and a few scenes where my socks were blown off or anything. It was pretty good action, but yeah, nothing amazing. Fan Siu Wong is awesome. Kind of slightly not sure whether to trust him or not for a lot of the film, which is good. There's a certain kind of ambiguity to him. And obviously he can handle himself in the fight scenes. The guy who plays the young Donnie, the young Ip Man, is pretty good as well. Although, it's got it's one of my gripes with Kung Fu films, especially things with Wong Fei Hung and Ip Man, which is, although it's happened in a lot of Kung Fu films, is the obligatory scene with a whitey who turns up and says something like, "Hey, Chinky, your Kung Fu is useless. I'll show you my Western boxing." And then, you know, obviously gets his ass kicked. Mm. But what really annoys me is he boxes like a complete turd. It's not even like he's boxing like a boxer would and getting his ass kicked. He's winging punches around. He's windmilling. He's windmilling like a footy hooligan on a Saturday afternoon after a couple of... A couple of tins of Buckfast or something. And it really annoys me. Oh yeah, and that scene happens in this one, unsurprisingly. The Japanese come in and just pure evil. Bastards to a man. With their crazy long hair. And karate.
Very few movies, I guess aside from Fist of Legend, really portrayed the Japanese in this kind of story as... Anything else but what you just said. I think Fist of Legend was a bit more balanced in that regard.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Well, Yasuaki Kurata, isn't it? And he was awesome.
Yeah.
And obviously the girl.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's it feels a little bit like a retread or just common elements from Kung Fu movies throughout the years. Kind of melded together into... I mean, there's the plot line of, well, what you're doing, you're changing our traditional style of Kung Fu, bringing your radical shit into it. We can't handle this radicalness. Kind of storyline. Then there's the whitey who can't box storyline. The evil Japanese who want to take over the school storyline. The brothers who kind of have a girl come between them, love triangle thing. All present and correct.
It all seemed like a movie, it just came kind of out of nowhere and obviously felt like, I wouldn't say a lesser, but, you know, a lower budget.
Ching-a-ling-a-ling, cash in.
Exactly. And it was even suggested, essentially, because Herman Yao's projects are not in this vein, really. He kind of works on the fringes, making tried movies, making a bit more personal movies, but not... He's never been this noticed for years, really. because he's doing this kind of movie, but it felt like a, you know, cash in, as we said, on the Ip Man phenomenon, because Ip Man made an impact, definitely. Otherwise, if they had made no impact, then no one would have wanted to make another another take on the story and the character. So, how's your view in this?
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I forgot to mention. Ewan Bute is awesome anyway. And, yeah, in this film, he's awesome. He has a couple of fight scenes, which are really good. A little scrap with... Well, sort of a training scrap with... Sammo Hung at the beginning.
Ah, uh-huh, nice.
Yeah, he's great. How much should I say? Yeah, him and... Fancy Wong are really good. Sammo's just Sammo as well. You know, reliable. Solid.
Veteran's doing well, and it's really heartwarming to see Yung Yu do well still. I mean, fighting or not, he was really good in another Herman Yao movie. He played a police officer in Laughing Gore Turning Point, and has some really good acting scenes with Anthony Wong, where just veterans are being really good actors, you know, playing it subtle and using their veteran presence and all that. So I think, even though we might not see a resurrection of Yung Bu's career, it's still very gratifying to see him do well.
Well, I believe there's a film maybe called Kingdom or My Kingdom or something like that, coming up, based around Chinese, Peking opera, kung fu performers, and that's choreographed by Sammo. And has Yung Bu and Yu Rong Guang in pretty prominent roles, I think.
Oh.
I have to double check what the name of that is, but.
And he's still. I'm sorry, just going to mention No Problem 2 is a good example of seeing Yung Bu still do well. It's a few years old at by this point, the Japanese Hong Kong co production, but he's really funny and he kicks ass in No Problem 2.
It's a crummy film, but Yung Bu's awesome.
I liked it. I thought it was good fun. And Ching Ka-Lok directed. So naturally, Stu watched it first of everyone on the planet.
I've never got around to it.
Really?
What's wrong with you? I know.
He's even in front of the camera. It's a small role. Him and fucking Eric Tsang and Yuri Lam has a scene together.
Even the dude from The Scorpion King came in and done his part.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's great. He's great.
He's a Korean dude, isn't he?
Kim Won Jin?
Yeah, Won Jin.
It's good. It's good fun. Nice thing, playing a good villain, and Wayne Lai playing very acting, very Japanese, acting very exaggerated. It's good fun, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, that film I was mentioning just now, it is called My Kingdom. Set in 1920s, and it's about the Peking opera guys who kind of specialise in martial arts.
It's the mainland film, therefore mainland director, it seems, or who's listed as director?
Gao Xiaosong. Written and directed by him. He's a composer and musician, apparently.
Right. Okay.
And I think Han Geng and Wu Chun are the stars. They're from Chinese boy bands.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so that's not too exciting, but then if you've got Sammo, Yung Bu, and Yu Rong Guang, then fingers crossed.
Yeah.
There's a bit of class in there. Mm-hmm. Hey, that reminds me. Seeing as I live for the Puff Christmas pub quiz, and I had it stolen from me by the Grinch, a.k.a. Stuart Sutherland.
Oops.
So, I'm going to spring questions on you asses.
Sweet, I got just my horn.
just to satisfy myself.
One click and you're hung up, Mike. One click and you're gone.
So question one. Who has appeared, according to IMDb, who has the most acting credits out of Jackie, Sammo and Yun?
Sammo.
Sure?
Probably a bit... sounds a bit right. Sammo done more work.
The correct answer is Sammo, with 150. Yuan Bu is in second with 119, and Jackie's last with 108.
Lazy bastard.
What a pussy.
I think that's more to do with the fact that Jackie's been doing starring roles for for earlier and longer than those two.
Samo's the elder as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, bit more.
Well, the guy took a break.
Yeah,
he was gone for like 2 years.
And at one point, that was a major break, probably, in Hong Kong cinema. You know, gone 2 years, he might as well be dead.
We've got like 12 actors replacing him.
Could have filmed about 80 films in that time.
Half of them starring Simon Yam.
Hey, I'm going to ask you a basic question back then, but it's not getting the question right or anything. It's not about that. Who do you like most out of this trio overall, based on just your overall opinion of them?
Who are you talking to?
Yeah, choose between me and Ken.
Stu, who do you like most out of Yung Yu, Sam Hong, and Jackie Chan?
I'd probably just say with Jackie, just out of him generally being around more and being starring in more movies. But it's always usually better when they're all together, like Project A and Wheels and Meals, Dragons Forever. Like, things like that are the best times, but in general, it's usually mostly just Jackie.
What about you, Mike?
Well, the thing is, starring in films, Jackie's got the better films. But then again, as time goes on, he says and does things that make him seem more and more like an asshat. So I might have to go, I'm going to go with Sammo. I think Sammo's the man. He moves awesomely well for a fat bloke. He's a good director. He's great with weapons. He's a really good choreographer. And when he's been the choreographer or director, Jackie's done some like high-grade stuff, like Dragons Forever.
And I like Yung Bu the most. Because nothing warms my heart more than to see him do well. And by the way, I'm going to shock the shit out of you now, Michael Banner. I've watched Dragons Forever.
Yay! What did you think?
It was good. It was good. It was good, simple fun. You know, it was not intended to be anything else than, you know, and it kicked ass in the action department. It was good seeing, you know, them together, but also like all the supporting cast. I mean, I didn't know anything about the supporting cast. Even fucking Charlie Cho is in it. Wolf Ung and Danny Yip is one of the love interests of Samos, and they just work so well together. And I like Yung Bu the most in this movie because he does so well playing a nutter. I didn't know the role, which was cool. I didn't know anything about the movie, really, which is the best thing when watching a movie for the first time, knowing basically nothing. And I didn't know he played a complete insane person. You know? And I just loved that. And you realize when the Prince of Dragons Forever doesn't have the therapy scenes with Stanley Fung, the character of Yung Bu doesn't make sense, because at one point he literally assaults Danny Yip and Sammo, I think. He just out of the blue turns into a serial killer, but he only does so because in the second of the therapy scenes, where the robbers are holding Stanley Fung hostage, the robbers are saying over the intercom, "Go and kill somebody." You know, he thinks he's getting advice from his therapist or psychologist, which is funny.
Yeah.
So without those two scenes, I think you realize how that it's funny that he certainly that he starts to attack people. And he has a wonderful fish tank as well in his little house.
There's a who's who of badasses in that film as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was good. I really dug it. It's you don't need to analyze it because it's nothing more than, you know, an entertaining film. And I agree, Jackie being choreographed by Sammo is sort of the best thing ever. When Jackie appears hard, you know, when it's hard fighting involving Jackie, with the Sammo stamp on it, I enjoy it more than anything. But Yung Bu playing a nut is fun. You'll see it in License to Steal as well, Stu. He's not right in the head in that one either.
I did see a quick shot of him trying to stop someone nicking a lassie's purse, but he ends up hitting her in the ass with a pineapple.
Yeah, something like that. It's essentially
he's trying to do good, but it comes off looking like a perv.
Yeah, but he tries to be an old-timey swordsman in the modern world, which doesn't really fit. You know, so it's good fun. Did you ever see License to Steal, Mike?
I have it, but I haven't watched it.
That is good fun as well.
Thanks. Yeah, I've got the DVD knocking around somewhere. I'm going to put it in my... I brought a DVD wallet back to England to fill it up. I'm going to fill it up and take some movies back to Korea. Yeah. That's one of the films I'm going to plonk in.
It's good fun. Nothing deep at all. And some good fighting as well. The chick from She Shoots Straight, like the muscle girl, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
She's in it as well. She co-stars with Joyce Kudelsi in License to Steal. And Richard and Nysing, and it's all good fun.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it. I think that's me done for the last movies watched.
Ken?
Righto, and this is for once, literally the last movie I watched, because I finished it yesterday, The Invincible, starring Jimmy Wang Yu, which is an old-timey swordplay movie that was pretty much lost. It was ironically mostly known to be on a full-screen tape from Korea. That's like the sole copy circulating over the years, but it's a terrible copy. But it was resurrected on German DVD. They found a German cinema print and resurrected it and put it out in widescreen and all of that. And I'm a big fan of Jimmy Wang Yu, who has literally a kick-ass filmography. I really dig bashing, swordplay, whatever it is, even acting. I mean, One on Swordsman is a good movie for dramatic acting as well. But also when he turned really kooky and wacky in this movie, like Master of the Flying Guillotine has some out there sights, and he directed that movie and playing his one-armed character. It's a one-armed boxer. It's a sequel to One-Armed Boxer, which is coincidentally a kick-ass film as well. So The Invincible is he plays swordsman Li Moibai, whose people are oppressed by not the evil Japanese but the evil Mongols. Those
damn Mongolians.
Yes. And in the beginning of the movie, he saves this swordswoman played by Helen Ma, who people might have seen in quite a rare movie, but now resurrected unofficially, though. A movie called Deaf Mute Heroine. It's a good little early 70s gritty swordsplay movie by Wu Ma, and she's really good in that. So Jimmy Wang's character saves her from bandits, but it turns out she's the sister of the main evil Mongol ruler. So he obviously directs hatred towards her, but he also finds out that he has kind of feelings for her, and feelings are, she responds with feelings as well. She's not as evil as her brother. So a interesting conflict, if you will, a classic conflict. Because Jimmy Wang Yu wants to save his people from the evil rulers, and he has hatred in his heart and wants to settle it in blood and all that, and he's got his people behind him and all of that. But it works, actually. It's basic complexity, but it works, actually, as a decent little dramatic core for the movie that also coincidentally kicks ass. I absolutely love when obviously swordplay is done well, but whenever Jimmy Wang Yu was part of any action movie at this time in Taiwan and a few years after this, which was made in 1972, it just made it great. He's kind of Fury, despite not knowing martial arts as such. It was so compelling to me. I absolutely love seeing him kick ass on screen, and it's probably it's a star power. It's a star asset, that. And he was big at this time, and especially at Shaw Brothers when he broke with One on Swordsman. So the action is good. It's quite complex and goes on for quite a long while in long takes, but it's not boring as such, and complex in its own right. A bit under crank, but not disturbingly so. It seemed like they were trying out some stuff rather than trying to hide the performance abilities and stuff like that, because both Jimmy Wang Yu and Helen Ma are do well. They aren't doubled at all times, if at all. it's probably a long shot at the beginning of her first scene that is definitely not her, but otherwise it's pretty much is her. And it's just good fun. I can't get enough of these kind of movies. And I gotta give props to whoever put together the German DVD, because the Mandarin track is not complete at all. It's like, it's filled with audio from the German dub. So occasionally for a minute you hear German dialogue, but also there's like split seconds of the Mandarin track missing, which is replaced by the German dub. So you hear like this change in audio all throughout the film, and must have been a nightmare to put that together, working with the elements you have and try and puzzle it together to make it in sync and flow and all that. And it's just such an amazing job. So on German DVD, you get to see it in mostly Mandarin and with English subtitles. So, but Germany got some good stuff back in the day playing in the cinemas. And this was one, so well recommended for fans of Jimmy Wang Yu. It's a bit expensive probably buying the DVD, but it's worth it in my opinion.
Cool. Well, Germany and the UK are two countries that tend to, well, have in the past as well, put quite a bit of effort into Kung Fu movie releases.
Yeah. And also, at the time, Germany put a lot of effort into them in terms of making the dubs for them. They were definitely, in many cases, considered class dubs. I mean, done by people who were known in Germany. The dubbers were known. People dubbing major Hollywood stars dubbed Asian movies and did so really, really well with them. They were not treating it like, you know, something to do half-assed at that time. I mean, it's a lot different now. And the final thing I have to mention, for instance, on DVD in Germany, you have Hitman in the Hand of Buddha, the Wang Jiang Li movie. Which was also a German cinema print, which is about like 15 minutes shorter than the original version. But I gotta tell you, it works so much better. Because they really took a look at that movie, saw that it was filled with annoying comedy, and cut a lot of that out, maybe 80% of it, to make it a more, you know, a much better movie in terms of flow. Because there's nothing special about Hitman in the Hand of Buddha. You're in it for the action, and it delivers that. So, you re-editing and cutting, let's say, it's not a bad thing when you focus on it, but that requires energy and skill, and you don't see that. You haven't seen that for a number of years with the whole Miramax controversy with cutting Hong Kong movies. They were necessarily not good editing jobs. So I love seeing those time capsules in a way, and also by the way, for Hitman in the Hand of Buddha, the full screen uncut version is on the DVD if you want to see it. But it's the comedy that they took out with Tou Xiuming and a lot of the Fan Mei Sheng beggar, who plays the beggar, drunken master, if you will, comedy. They took some of that out, and the movie works so much better.
So I finally got around to watching the Blu-ray edition of Vengeance, the Johnny To film, starring Johnny Halliday, aka like the true life Chupacabra. Like, that dude ain't human, seriously.
Yeah, French Elvis, if anything.
No, just fucking the devil himself.
Yeah, Elvis.
Jeremy Kyle.
And it's like fucking Mickey Rourke and the devil like had a baby, and then it was horribly burned in a fire.
Nice.
I kept expecting, like, he's the bad guy, isn't he? Like, no. Obviously, his family's been killed. It's like, no, but look at him. Yeah. He's good. He's the killer all along, isn't he? But I was wrong. It was Simon Yam. So.
Nice.
So, it's the story.
It's always Simon Yam.
It's a good chance.
Well, Simon Yam's the answer to about 80% of questions on Hong Kong cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Who's in this film? Simon Yam. Who's the killer? Simon Yam.
President of the country, same way. Close enough.
Oh, no, fuck no. Andy Lau will be the president of Hong Kong. If you watch the Golden Chicken movies, Andy Lau is the president of Hong Kong. or whatever equivalent title there. It makes sense.
Aye.
First ever android elected to a government.
He's actually aged. So I don't know what they did. He's an elder president in Golden Chicken 2.
But I love that revelation.
Yeah, but
he's actually aged.
Yeah, but it might have been like an accident with hairspray. As well.
Probably because visual effects.
Yeah, he didn't look old otherwise. You know, he didn't have prosthetics. He was just Andy Lau with grey hair.
So the story, for those that aren't aware, Johnny Halliday's family who live in Macau were brutally assassinated, and he flies across to see his daughter while she was still alive. Like, she somehow survived, like, being shot to shit. And Johnny Halliday basically says he's going to avenge the death of his family. So he meets three hitmen played by Anthony Wong, Gordon Lam, and Lam Suet, and basically hires them to find the people that killed his family. Dum dum dum.
Vengeance.
Yes. And I was really glad, because this is one of these cool movies where everyone's talking English, even though it's not their first language. So it has this cool novelty factor. I know, like, when we had that in Full Time Killer, and it wasn't very good, but...
But it makes sense here, doesn't it? I mean, the Chinese people, when they're alone, I guess, are speaking Chinese to each other. Yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
I think.
They didn't in Full Time Killer, and that was the most embarrassing thing about that film. And Lau and Lam Suet speaking English to each other or whatever. Like, come on.
They didn't recognize they were actually Chinese. Oh. It was a badly lit room. I think Johnny Toe might have learned his lesson this time around by actually having Gordon Lam and Lam Suet dubbed. I never knew this. I was really convinced that it was them talking English. Oh. But it has actual English voice credits for Conroy Chan and Terence Yin in the credits.
Canadians. Bring in the Canadians.
So it was like only Anthony Wong that could fucking hold the boat himself.
And Simon Yam, I guess, to an extent.
Aye, badly. But aye. You done. It was a good film. I've not watched it since the Terracotta Festival back last year, but it did remain a really good film, and it didn't feel as long as I thought it was, because it is actually under 2 hours, which is good. It doesn't overstay its welcome.
Many people say like it's solid, but not Johnny Toe's best work necessarily. It's him retreading stuff, but that doesn't need to be a bad thing necessarily. Mm. I mean, you can do well.
He gets away with it by making the movie just look cool as fuck. It does like tick all the normal Johnny Toe boxes, in the sense that you need to suspend the suspension of disbelief and all that, if you can believe the fact that three Chinese men could shoot a bike into motion. Like a bicycle cool. Lying in a trash dump, and they're just sitting shooting it, and then it fucking springs to life and goes down the street.
Yeah, why not? Just because. Yeah.
Aye. So it does, it ticks the normal Johnny Toe boxes, but that's cool. You can let that happen.
Yeah. I mean, it actually makes sense that it sort of ticks all the same boxes, because also he essentially always uses the same crew as well.
Aye.
Especially, it's always the same cinematographer, Cheng Siu-Kung, and it was a damn fine cinematographer as well. So find people you like working with, go for it. And the cast as well. I mean... not so much Lau Ching Wan nowadays. It was more like that in the beginning of Milky Way, but still the same guys.
Yeah.
And they're good as well. They're not bad. They're actually good actors.
Because Gordon Lam's making more... Well, he's seen in it more often now. Like with Mad Detective. He actually... I am totally blanking at a minute, but he did do really good in that film as well as like Lau Ching Wan.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those guys that you find that you recognise after many years of him appearing in Johnny Toe movies. I never knew who he was. He was in Infernal Affairs, I mean, but he never made an impression on me, despite having a key role, as it turned out, at the end of the Infernal Affairs. I won't say what happened, but he was involved.
He shot Matt Damon. Wait, wrong one. Oh, okay, aye.
The bad one.
So, that was it, really. That's all I've been catching up with. I was planning on watching Mad Detective because I have got my Blu-ray a copy since then. I was almost shocked at first. I said, right, let's see the quality of this. And it was really grainy, pixelated, bad. I was like, whoa, this is a step back. And I realised, like, they don't put all the money into putting high definition on the trailers.
Yeah, of course. Not
aye.
Always.
So
it's not needed always as well. I'm not stickler for that. So.
Mm-hmm. So I put the movie on and it was perfect. Like,
Masters of Pixelated Cinema Edition.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I look forward to catching up with that. And I've ordered some more and bring on.
you Blu-ray geek, you.
I just like watching my favourite movies in the best way that I can. Mm. But yeah, come on. Young and Dangerous series, Blu-ray, what the hell?
If appearing in Hong Kong, then there's a chance there won't be it won't be much of an upgrade.
You'll only have to end up buying the 3D version in a few years.
Yeah.
Wait. But aye, it's that's inevitable. It for me, for movies, really.
Yeah. Did you guys see, like, I mean, the Blu-rays in Hong Kong are an embarrassment. Did you guys see, like, the screen caps from Full Throttle Blu-ray? Oh,
nope.
My God, that was the... I mean, what the hell did they do? It's worse than the DVD. It's
well,
actually...
I've read for a few of them that it's just usually upscaling, right?
Yeah.
So it's not actually a true
HD. It can be done good, but the Hong Kong companies are not doing that very well.
I hear the Police Story films, which would have been a must-buy for me, Blu-ray, they were just upscaled.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is that I have... I know, I spoke a little with Paul, I think it was Paul from it was Kevin from Comcast East Screen, West Screen podcast. And obviously, it does take a little money to actually strike a full high-definition print. So by you know, they cut cost by putting out the Blu-ray there as just an upconverted DVD. But the problem I have there is they have a fucking, like, blue stripe and lots of cool little text saying Full HD, 1080, beyond high definition. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a bogus product, and that's just illegal, in my opinion. So reissue a DVD, for fuck's sake, if you want to earn some money. At least we know it's a proper DVD, so keep an eye out. Do your research. Blu-rays in Hong Kong is currently not for the majority of the titles. It's not a good thing. Bruce Lee movies, I think, at least Big Boss, Fist of Fury, Way to Dragon are actually a real HD masters.
Yeah, I heard Fist of Fury was very good.
Yeah, I saw that. I really liked that. It looked good. People complained that it looked green, but I had no problem with that. It looked good and looked as good as it can do at this point, unless someone goes in and do a full expensive fucking remaster. but it warranted the Blu-ray little blue stripe.
Awesome. So I am really weary of my Blu-rays at the minute. I would, as you suggested, you have to do your research.
Yeah.
Before putting that sort of money into the purchase.
Even new movies can be quite misrepresented on Blu-ray. But the problem is this. I've learned I'm not a very anal person when it comes to image and audio, because I know little of how to judge those things. But I know for a fact now, living in the high-definition era, that grain is a very good thing. Grain is a natural thing of film, the prints and film stock, but they tend to many times filter out the grain so that people with the new expensive TVs won't think there's something wrong with all the little dots appearing on screen, and with that you sacrifice the sharpness as well. When you remove the grain, you filter out the grain, and right now there's no smooth way of doing that, to maintain sharpness but to filter out grain. So I don't like that stuff, and even for new movies. I saw Caps from Detective D, the Troy Huck movie. Mm-hmm. It looks okay, obviously, but they definitely did swipe that a little bit, or too much for my liking. But so I'll probably go for the DVD of that, because I still think the DVDs looks okay, even though I bought a new TV a year ago, a fairly big one. I still think DVDs look alright.
Okay, so question time. What? I was going to say recently, but it's this month at least. I think maybe 6th or 7th of January. Tony Jaa was spotted out and about at some kind of event at his old school. Children's Day or some crap like that. But that means that he's out of the monkhood. Well, in case you didn't know, after Ong Bak 3 and all the rumoured problems, well, not rumoured, actual problems he had with the company that he's contracted to, Sir Ha Mun Kol, he went in to become a Buddhist monk. Where apparently, a lot of people, including myself, are worried about that maybe he was just like, screw the film industry, I'm out of here. But quite a few people have said that it's not uncommon, if in fact fairly common, for Thai men at some point in their lives to do maybe 6 months or a year as monks at a Buddhist temple. And it appears that's what's happened, because Tony's out and the pictures of him looking very lean and with hair in his head, non-monkified. Seeing that and thinking, awesome, I hope he's going to get back into the movie industry and start knocking out some cracking films again. Because he's pretty much the only, the only actor that I will blind buy a film as soon as it comes out. It used to be the same way with Jackie Chan, but then, you know, you can only get stung so many times before you give up.
Being an asshat and all.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm excited about that. But it got me thinking that if he hadn't come out of the monkhood and this was it for his film career, and he left, lots of cameo things in old Panaritikai films, but they don't count because they're mostly crappy. He would have left Ong Bak, Tom Yung-gung, Ong Bak 2 and Ong Bak 3 as his kind of movie legacy. That it would have been a bit of a waste, possibly, of his talent or his ability, because I think he's got the all-round ability to be probably one of the greatest of all time, up there with kind of Jackie and Bruce Lee and stuff. The question is, after that rambling intro, which actors or actresses do you think, or maybe even directors, have kind of squandered their potential or wasted their potential? Maybe through, you know, career choices or lifestyle choices or just bad luck or various other reasons. Can you think of any? Okay, well, I think I'm kind of going to answer my own question first, if that's all right with you. So I think it's the kind of question where you get asked it and think, I haven't got a clue. But then once you start talking, you'll be like, oh, yeah, hang on a second. I've got some ideas. So, yeah, my nomination, and linking back to the last movies watched, is Fan Siu Wong.
Oh, yes.
Now, I don't know why it happened. It could be just a timing thing, or just never quite getting the right parts or something, because he obviously didn't, as far as I know, he hasn't had any problems kind of, you know, in his personal life, drink or drugs or anything like that, that would have ruined his career or, you know, done anything stupid. But, you know, from an early age, and, you know, very early age, in fact, in quite a few films, I think he showed a lot of potential, a lot of ability. He's obviously, he could kick a whole lot of ass in terms of martial arts ability. Very gifted in that department. And like I said in the review of Legend is Born, I think he's a good actor in the kind of martial arts genre. he can definitely play good and bad, and he's got a good kind of, I think, do both, because he can give off this air of you not quite sure if you can trust him or not. He's got a bit of edge to him, and yeah, I think he's got some dramatic acting ability as well as being able to do the action. His career never seemed to really take off.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to briefly quote he's in The Moss playing the beggar, who's actually an assassin, but that's a dramatic role that he did very well in recently. So you're spot on there. Your observations are actually very true.
Because I don't know if it was because of the story of Ricky, but as far as I know, kind of his star was on the rise, and then it wasn't after Story of Ricky. Because obviously, in the UK, that was like a huge, well, as Asian movies go, that was a huge hit on DVD. That was like, I seem to remember Bay Logan saying that when he interviewed him or met him, he kind of told him that in the UK, Story of Ricky had far outsold like Drunken Master and stuff, and Snake in the Eagle Shadow by Jackie Chan. And obviously those being revered as classics kind of like blew Fan Xu Wong's mind a little bit.
Certainly, I mean, it's like it didn't really do well at the time, and you know, it's never had a reputation in Hong Kong compared to the West, where it's regarded as a cult classic, a really fun cult classic, which it is, Story of Ricky. But I think you're right; it's actually the truth that he just never broke out, and he never found. I mean, he might have found good parts, and I mean, he's great in Stone Age Warriors the year after for Stanley Tong. And look good and all that, but it never really happened for him until now. Grew older and maybe wiser and got more experience and breaking out in your older years. I mean, it's not old, but older. It's not a bad thing.
Would you think maybe it was just a timing kind of issue? Like, basically, he'd missed the kind of big boom of like mid-80s to early 90s action films, really? So when he was kind of coming into his prime, maybe it was the cycle was kind of dying down.
Yeah, maybe a mixture of that and a lot of elements, really. Maybe Story of Ricky, for example, might have done better if it had been released 2-3 years later, because the Category 3 boom was a lot more of a big thing at that time later on. But I don't know. You never know sometimes. With roles, you might see like this is an ill-timed movie because the trend is not there. But then again, you never know when certain things are going to hit. And I'm not exactly sure why Fan Xu Wong never broke. It just wasn't his time. The public wasn't desiring it, and eventually the role stopped coming in because he wasn't a commercial element. I mean, he's in a lot of these like Danny Lee police procedural movies, but his background roles really, it isn't Fan Xu Wong vehicles, and he didn't really look good playing a young policeman. He didn't make an impact. So I think it's all a matter of timing in the end, and growing into your looks is definitely a key for many actors, including, you know, Ekin Cheng. I've always said the best thing he ever did was to grow older, and then the presence happened. And it's definitely true for Fan Xu Wong. You know, I mean, he looked a bit too boyish to me back then to be like a leading man. Now he has a bit of a, I don't know, roughness, ruggedness to him.
Would you mean like a leading man in action films or just a leading man in general? Because Leslie Cheung kind of never had that mannishness, right? That ruggedness. He was always very boyish. And yet he was a lead in tons of films and super popular.
Yeah. It's hard to say, but I guess I mean in general, though, leading man potential in general. And Story of Ricky, like, it didn't really showcase him well as an action performer. It was not meant to be an action movie as such. It's a gore flick, and it's not. Gore flicks such as that aren't very common in Hong Kong, and not automatic box office successes either. So, yeah, I mean, it's a mixture of all things, really. It's really hard to nail down It's fun though to see his transformation from writing Ross to Story of Ricky. Mm-hmm. He blew up.
Bitch got built.
This tiny little kid in Righting Wrongs. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, can you think of anybody else then? Have you got answers for this, Kenneth?
I kind of do, because I didn't do any research because I didn't have any time before this podcast to do so. But it might sound silly, but I'm going to stick with this. I think it's kind of true. If the question is sort of along the lines, people have wasted their potential, people have never broke out despite having the chance to do so. And I'm not joking when I say this. Edison Chen. Because right before the scandal, the photo scandal, he did Dog Bite Dog. And that was actually a good showcase for him.
Mm-hmm.
Very much a silent part, which requires presence and, you know, acting with very little means. You know, your eyes, your entire body, your presence. And when you see interviews with him on the set of that film, there's a lot of stuff on the Hong Kong DVD. You get a sense that this guy who really wants to try with his craft, means what he's doing with his craft. And then he kind of fucked up with something non-movie related, with the whole photo scandal thing. Because I saw stuff in Edison Chen that would have meant, like, maybe 5 years later, maybe 10 years later, he had built up something that would be really, really good for Hong Kong cinema. He would have built up presence and all that. And I don't know if he's ever going to get that chance again based on what he did.
Although, I mean, I think I've said this on the podcast before when the scandal came out. What he did was forget to delete some pictures when he took his computer in for repair.
Yep.
It's hardly crime of the century.
Mm-hmm. And sure. Did that not, like, earn him a cameo in The Dark Knight?
Apparently.
You can't get any higher now.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, Ken. I think a little bit. Because although he's kind of, you know, boy bandy and not really taken seriously, that was a kind of role where, while not winning him, like, major awards, would, I'm sure, have got people to notice him.
Yeah.
Outside of just being a celebrity, but as in, okay, he's not amazing, but he's got potential. His acting could go somewhere. Because, I mean, I could be wrong about this, but Andy Lau wasn't taken totally seriously, right, as an actor when he first started.
No, he was,
as far as I remember,
bad at times. He was really annoying at times. Really like trying to act cool, but like in this very forced way. Some movies is like, it looks like he's trying to be giant fat, but oh my god, that is corny. And then came along a movie like A Moment of Romance, and a working habit and a working kind of dedicated working effort that eventually paid off again as he grew older.
Well, theoretically grow older.
Yeah, theoretically, of course. Let's leave it at that. As time passed, of course. When Andy Lau turned 3,859, something happened to him.
Something in his memory, in his circuitry.
Yeah.
It took, RAM expansion.
And that RAM expansion probably happened at around the time of Running Out of Time. Because I think he's really good in that. And he won the award for that as well. And such an assured presence now. So it really takes a lot. Sometimes it takes a lot of years before something happens. And you have to. Hopefully you have like that life in the industry as well. You know, the industry gives you that time. Andy Lau is a case, and Leslie Cheung is a case where they were in the industry for three decades, and Andy Lau is still going. Obviously, Leslie Cheung is not with us anymore. So, but I saw some positive things in Edison Chen and Princess D a few years earlier, the Sylvia Chang film with Daniel Wu. I thought it was really natural there. He played a kid. He played his age. And didn't try to play up the coolness, which was the most unbearable thing of about 30 minutes I watched of Gen Y cops. Oh, dear Lord. White people trying to act black. White Canadian people trying to act black. You know, his What Up Dog performance, that didn't signal any good potential. But Princess D, Infernal Affairs 2 is still all right. I rewatched that recently. He does all right.
Yeah, I think he's all right in that film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can sense, like, it's not just a pop star doing it for the buck. In these three movies, Infernal Affairs 2, Dog Bite Dog, and Princess D, you see someone who's got belief by the director, the directors, in the case of Infernal Affairs, and he responds to that. Maybe it will take 10 years before he rebounds at all from this, or I don't know, but it will take quite a while because he's not invited back to the industry anytime soon.
Was it not his last thing was the snipers, or?
Yeah, that got delayed and re-edited. He was in it a lot more originally.
They did it.
Essentially, they did, because no one wanted... It's kind of cruel, though. I don't think this is deserved, but essentially they thought, like, no one wants to see Edison Chen in a movie. But we want to release this movie, so we'll just make him a little bit smaller on the poster and in the movie.
Yeah. I think he's unfortunate that he's in the Chinese film business as well.
I think
I was going to say, if he was in Hollywood, okay, this would be a big scandal. And he'd be in a lot of bother. But, you know, take a year or two out and then just come back and keep working. And eventually people will forget about it.
Yeah.
And he'll be okay. But I don't know if that's going to happen in China and Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm. I was basically thinking the same thing. Is that it's just a case that, like, Hong Kong or China is, like, seems too fragile. Like, in a sense, if they had their equivalent of a Paris Hilton, like, sex tape, she would have probably gotten executed rather than getting a film career.
Mm. It's very it is kind of heartbreaking that, because the other participants, if you will, in the scandal, like Jin Hyun Chung, she didn't get hired for a number of years and still, I think, is struggling to get projects off the ground. And slowly but surely, I think she's getting gigs. But that's like the sad, heartbreaking thing, because there you have someone, Jin Hyun Chung, that also showed really great promise as she got a little bit older, a little less pop starry, in a little bit less pop starry vehicles. Not every movie needed to be a fucking twins movie, and you know, you got Beyond Our Ken as a good example of that. But so it's really sad that the industry just flat out refuses to take a chance, even when the scandal is about 2 years old.
Aye,
because maybe the public actually, I don't know how the Chinese or Hong Kong public works, but maybe the public is actually good at forgetting that stuff, but it's the fucking studios and the money people that think the audience is thinking this and that. And that's a global thing, because studios and producers and filmmakers, they think for the audience when the audience actually can think for themselves. When you get them a chance.
They're way back in if they want to get back in. Well, Edison said he'd quit Hong Kong show business. If Gillian wants to get back in, I think her route would be to do some kind of low budget indie films that kind of wouldn't mind the reputation and obviously aren't going to make big bucks and would probably welcome a bit of kind of star power, or you know, a bit of draw that she would bring. And then
she had one released fairly recently. I've forgotten the name of it, but that was an actually small movie. I think it was maybe like a very arty movie as well. But or that might have been a one that was shelved and released just recently because of the whole thing. Slowly but surely, I would love to see Gillian back. She deserves it. Really good looking and nothing wrong with that presence, you know. She's never been an annoying pop star presence in my view. Charlene Choi has had problems with that. Escaping the pop star image because she kind of looks more cute than someone you can't take serious. But I think there's potential there as well, of course.
Okay, what about you, Stu? You got an answer for us?
Yeah, I was really sort of Mike what was brought to light after catching up on episodes of another podcast, and it brought me the attention to certain actors that just don't stand out anymore. And one that I actually came across myself, which could just be me, but after researching like another Young and Dangerous article I was writing recently, and it got to the point where I said, right, I'm going to write about like where are they today, and mention all the stuff about Eakin, and then thinking Jordan Chan's not really done that much, has he? He's not really been that notable outside the Young and Dangerous series in my world.
No.
He was in Initial D, but
once a gangster recently, but few and far in between.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Like Young and Dangerous, that finished about 2000s. Mm-hmm. And he's been in a bunch of things, but it's not really. Nah, he's just. I feel he's faded like, into obscurity.
Yeah, there's definitely potential there. Is this guy that kind of. Not classic leading man material, but definitely talent. I always liked his presence, most of the time anyway. I think he fared better when being a bit more serious. But I haven't seen the Young and Dangerous films. He might be very good as a triad. So what's your take on him and the Young and Dangerous films?
He stole the show in some films. Like for Young and Dangerous 2, there was a lot of it was like a flashback when he took exile in Taiwan, and it folk like that, a lot of it was given to him. And he done really good in Young and Dangerous 4 when he was like, well, when the storyline was split down the middle and it was up to him, between him and a rival triad, to see who would be able to run this piece of turf. And it was just the amount of fucking cruel tricks other triads were playing on him. Like, there were scenes where he was saving a girl from being raped, but it was actually just triad setting him up, and it's him and fucking 20 other triads surrounding him, and they're just making him get on his knees and fucking kowtow, call him daddy, and just fucking ripping the shit out of him in front of his girl. So he gets, like, he takes more abuse throughout it, and the thing is, like, he does do so well. It's like he has some incredible restraint, and you can see there is, like, he is a good actor, but like outside of Young and Dangerous, where he outshined like Eakin Cheng on many movies, but outside of that series, he's nowhere. Like Initial D, and that was it.
Do you think he had the, you know, he had the potential to be like a big star? A headliner on a film, a face on a poster?
I would think so. I think because he did do good in Young and Dangerous, and I was expecting maybe more triad related films, and that's why I was really interested when Ken had done a review of was it Hong Kong Bronx?
Yes.
Like that sounded like it was going along the right lines, because like that's what I thought. Like out of my limited viewing of what movies he's been in, like he does quite good as a triad, and if he was taken more seriously, it'd probably work.
Yeah, like, he was the best thing about that film, actually.
And it's he could have easily just been a background face in like Infernal Affairs that wouldn't have stand out notably, but he would have done all right.
I
throw the man a bone.
Yeah. I think the problem with some of these 90s actors that were very prolific and talented in their own right and leading men and women in certain movies, as Hong Kong cinema productivity slowed down, I think therein lies a sort of danger as well, that not everybody gets a chance. Within like smaller and smaller and smaller productivity, you know, the leading man gets decreased to, you know, the already big names, and you get less and less breakouts, and maybe that will change again.
And I was saying that I've not seen Once a Gangster yet, so it could easily change my mind saying, well, or it could make my point stand out even more saying he is a good actor, and just he's not being used right.
Yeah.
Or just not used at all. Because it's that vague, I easily can't tell what movies he's been working on or what movies of his that's just came out. He's just Anki has just faded into like some sort of supporting actor.
Yeah. Profiles that have not been super active in the last 10-15 years, maybe like will take belief by filmmakers to put him in a big movie and then something will happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it's a difficult thing. I mean, it just takes sometimes the right timing, and the right timing is incredibly hard to find. Mm-hmm. Like the right timing, and even if they do put a guy like Jordan Chan in an incredibly odd movie, that odd movie might strike an unexpected chord with the Asian audience.
Mm-hmm. And I think he didn't get that chance in the past decades when he was Pang Ho Chung's Men Suddenly in Black.
Oh, yes.
Like, that was a surprisingly good... He did do surprisingly well in that movie. Like, along with, like, Chapman Toe, Eric Tsang, and that kid. He's fading into obscurity. Fuck him.
Yeah. Who knows that kid?
Aye.
See, I've got a slightly weird one.
Go.
I might sound a bit stupid. For a wasted potential. But I'm going to say Jackie Chan. Right, as a director.
Right.
Because Jackie Chan's directed some of my favourites out of his own films. Well, like Legend of... Well, Drunken Master 2, although that's Lau Ga-Lung for a fair bit, and Jackie Chan finished it off. Yeah. But Miracles.
Nice.
Is right up there as one of my favourite Jackie Chan films. And Project A Part 2 is a top film. Police Story 2. Yeah, there's some good films there, and I think he could direct, not necessarily starring himself either, other people, handling, you know, some the full directing and the action. He could be, and with, you know, his own production company and the kind of drawing power of being Jackie Chan the director, he could put together some seriously good films as a director.
I think he's possibly, when I was looking at IMDb a wee while ago, I'm pretty sure he was put down as a credit for the Chinese Zodiac, like that supposedly proposed Arm of God 3.
Yep. Yeah, I've heard that.
He was in the director's chair for that, but I heard that was pretty much like his passing the torch kind of film.
Yeah. His Armour of God films, Armour of God is another cracker that he directed.
Do you think it's him not having a desire to direct currently, or?
I think he's just probably loving being a movie star, right?
Sure.
And while he's still getting tons of roles and people are still going to see his films, then why not? I mean, the thing about this one is that obviously he's still got plenty of time to be a director.
Yeah.
Say if he, you know, if he's output of, well, I don't know how long he can keep being a leading man, I'm not sure. I don't know how long he can keep it up for. I guess until people stop wanting to go see his films.
Yeah, it's not to do good projects and find good projects. And I don't know if you've seen Little Bits, Big Soldier, but man, I was so pleased with the Jackie in that film.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, good film. Very good.
Well, I think there's no reason why he couldn't maybe Clint Eastwood style.
Oh, Jackie Chan Gran Torino style. Hey! Racist Jackie Chan.
I was thinking more as in, you know, dial down or drop off the amount of films he does as an actor and then just take over just solidly as a director, pretty much. Occasionally doing films like you said, Gran Torino, where Jackie can do films or smaller roles.
Yeah.
Because I'd love to see him direct some films.
I think he has it in him. I mean, I think me and Brian Kirby talked about it on the very first Jackie Chan special, that he has such a good eye, as evident in Miracles. That was not a fluke thing.
No, that's a damn good film, that is.
Yeah, absolutely. And even subsequent movies like Operation Condor, you know, greatly entertaining, and just such a great scope to that film. And you know, he's done actual movies, and that was the known thing, obviously, that critics challenge him on that. You're just an action guy. You're not an actual director. You know, here's Miracles. Fuck you.
Yes, yeah, so I'd love to see him direct some more films. I think that'd be great.
And also, he you know, he doing edgy material is something I'm pleased by with Jackie as well, because Shinjuku Incident we saw when doing the Jackie Chan special, and overall it has some flaws, but overall it works very well. It's not Jackie-fied at all, and if the story is true that Mike Leader said that Derek Yee, the director, let Jackie shoot action, but eventually Derek cut all the action, maybe that's a good thing. That's the way to work Jackie too, because that movie didn't need action. It needed a performance by Jackie, and man, I thought he delivered. I didn't look at, oh, that's Jackie Chan who's trying to act, how cute. that was a character to me. So I hope he realizes that is not wasted potential. That is something to try and latch on to.
Cool, are we done with that question?
Yeah, definitely.
Alright then, so I think it's been my final question in Mikecast 2011.
Ace.
Alright, now I don't know if you've seen it, but there is such thing as a Z-Eagle in the world. Well, Creative are a electronics manufacturer from Singapore who make MP3 players, graphic cards, that kind of crap. In fact, I've got a Creative Zen MP3 player, very good. And their new chipping the jig or something that they work in is called a ZII. And so what Creative have done, have used their chips and whatnot and done a deal with Celestial to put virtually every film that Celestial have remastered onto a hard drive box. Question number two. How many movies are on the Creative Z-Eagle? Stu?
Fuck you. Don't throw that on me.
Ken?
1,200.
No. Halve it. We have 668 Shaw Brothers films on one hard drive box, which are all ordered into different categories like actors, genre. There's a four-digit code for each one, so you can buy you have a companion book that goes with it, and you can look at the write-ups, the pictures, everything, find the code, select the movie, or you can choose the different coloured buttons, red, green, yellow, and blue, on the bottom of the controller, correspond to different moods of film. So, like, red would be like action and horror.
Can't mix it up.
Green might be romance or something. And then, so you press one, and it'll play you a random film off the box.
And if you press blue and yellow, well, what would that green choice be then? Because blue and yellow turns green. You know, can you mix it up?
Yeah, maybe. Get a little cocktail going.
Yeah. That begs the question, or maybe you will tell us this. Are there movies on there that Celestial never bothered to release on DVD, like... Killer Mastermind, for example.
To Killer Mastermind is on there. Ooh. With English subtitles. All the films are English subtitled, and the box is in 720p HD.
That's nice.
And so I hear a lot of the earlier films that Celestial released, which people weren't completely happy with the picture quality, look a whole lot better on this box.
Exactly, because the thing is, the DVDs, they do not... they obviously are very... degrained, but there are HD transfers available for the Shaw Brothers movies. The Deadly Duo Blu-ray, I know you've seen that, Mike, but that's an example of how lovely these can look, even if it's only 720p. But that, you know, the Shaw Brothers, the clean Shaw Brothers movies with all the clean sets and all, that looks beautiful when it's a bit grainy. So, that sounds good. I like the sound of this. And also, To Kill a Mastermind is one example of a very wanted movie. But Shaw Brothers just had so many cool, exploitation movies that never were released as well. Because that doesn't sell as well. But a lot of horror stuff and just cool exploitation movies, like bike movies, like Killer Angels on Wheels, I think one is called. So some biking movie that's really cool. But I like the sound of this.
Yeah, me too. I mean, the slight problem is that it costs 880, well, it's supposed to be Singaporean dollars.
Uh-huh.
Which would be about £600.
Well, per movie, that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, per movie, and it's more than that are available on DVD, as far as I know. Because obviously films like To Kill a Mastermind are on there, and I think maybe The Black Enforcer, mm-hmm. which is a exploitation film that people have wanted for ages, and lots of other things.
Yeah. And this, how would this technically work? You could just plug it into your computer and they'll...
Maybe you just take it. It's got HDMI output, HDMI into your TV.
Right. Oh, you can even sits plug there. It into your TV. Good, good.
Yep. You just sit there and you choose your films and you watch it. So, my question is, for me, that's a bit of a dream product. Although I'm very much a kind of, most of the time, I like having things in my hand. So I like having the kind of DVD box and have them sitting on my shelf and whatnot in the collection. Mm. I don't think I could pass up the opportunity to have, like, pretty much every Shaw Brothers film I can get my hands on in one box, in good quality. That'd be amazing. So, if that's my dream Asian movie product, what's yours?
I think that's the dream for every Asian cinema fan. They'd really just have a magical black box with every movie on it.
Yeah, everything assembled. I mean, like, as an equivalent, like, assemble the Golden Harvest catalogue. You know, that wonderful early Golden Harvest catalogue of, you know, or just... I like anything that is assembled for me that way. And I don't, you know, because I don't need to hunt anymore. You know, everything is, it's okay to be in one box. So go further, people, and you'll fulfill my dream. Like, do fill one such box up with Golden Harvest or many of the...
I can see it now, Ken. In a few years, when the podcasts are, you know, you're professionally making podcasts and they're a big hit. Yeah. The Sleazy K endorsed Cat 3 box.
My mind, sir.
That's just a black box of stains all over it.
Yeah. Exactly. Probably shaped like some boobs or something.
and you press like one button that represents a random Charlie Cho movie or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Which would be its own box, really, with 720 movies or something like that. Only Charlie Cho.
That would be like the red button on the remote with glasses on it.
What's it up to this time? Oh, that thing.
Yeah, the old buttons with little pictures on, like sperm, blood, ninja.
See, Stu, I thought you were going to say, seeing as you kind of mentioned it earlier, a Young and Dangerous Blu-ray box set.
But I feel in a sense there's so many films that I've just never seen yet, and you need to see every, you feel like it's your mission in life. Like, I know I'll die not seeing every movie I want to see, and it's a thing where it's like, I feel like you're already one step there when, like, you get the PlayStation 3 and you get Blu-ray players with, like, Love Film, like our equivalent of Netflix, built into it, that have so many movies at hand, and you just, like, scroll through it. Like, they do have their World Cinema section, but it doesn't go any further than, like, the Tartan Asia collection and a couple of Third Window films. Well, it still plagues me. Aye. So, like, it's cool, like, you could have films like Despoto, Naughty Girls, like, on demand, as well as Thirst and Infernal Affairs movies, but there needs to be, like, thousands more. Like, I get the impression that Netflix, like, seems to have fucking everything on demand, whereas Love Film introduce new stuff every week, but they only leave stuff up for like a fortnight. Like, they had Tokyo Gore Police for like a couple weeks, the period have now got things like Seven Samurai. Like, if they go further and give us more Akira Kurosawa and just films that we can actually get on DVD would be so much awesome. Like, coming across with like things that didn't need to be licensed at the time. Like, we mentioned the other night on What's Korean Cinema, films like Take Care of My Cat. Like, that's been shown in the UK, so that's, someone's got the rights to that somewhere. Like, just bang it on demand. I'll happily pay a few quid, but like, just having not everything available. I have everything available on this Wii box. If they just extend their catalogues, then we're getting that little bit closer to the dream.
I just thought of something, a proper answer to your question, Mike. I would love a box with all, in fairly good quality at least, all the IFD movies throughout the years. All the Richard Harrison movies throughout the years. Because those movies, they were coming out in quantity. Just boom, 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 boom. Ninja, ninja, ninja. Kickboxer, kickboxer, kickboxer. You know, that would be maybe a bigger library than the Shaw Brothers library. Because they could have like 20 minutes of Richard Harrison footage and splice it out over 20 movies. It would work. And they did. I mean, it's not a theory. They did. The Garfield phone footage appeared in probably 20 movies. It's amazing, that piece of footage where Richard Harrison's cameo in that IFD movie, newly, badly dubbed, you know, phone conversation, and it's a fucking Garfield phone. It's not a neutral scene because it's a Garfield phone. It slays me every time. It's wonderful. Special appearance by Richard Harrison. And do you think Jim Davis and Paws Inc., you know, the Garfield people, get anything of that? No. But they never sued Hong Kong cinema. Hong Kong cinema, the entire Hong Kong cinema. Because it's not only IFD, Garfield tends to turn up in lots of Hong Kong cinema. The phone and other stuff. But to have in fairly good quality, at least the IFD library would be great. And when I say that, is that widescreen sources aren't very available, but many of these movies, they have like the sound is very bad. Normally that English dub is so incredibly muffled, and you take it obviously, but it seems like it's there's a reason many of these movies are in the bargain bins, because low quality overall really. But the IFD library is very, very fun, and you have a button for Richard Harrison, have a button for Pierre Kirby, and a button for Stuart Smith and all those leading men. And you know,
so in summary,
we want,
I would like every Shaw Brothers film, Ken would like every IFD film, and Stu would like
everything.
Greedy pig.
But I would easily settle for Penny Cab Driver on DVD.
Yeah,
that would be awesome.
That would be a very naive dream, Stuart. It is a naive dream. Warner Brothers, we hate you, but we know it's not going to change anytime soon, unless someone else is in charge of Warner Brothers.
Or somebody in a different country decides they want to release it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's never turned up in France or Japan. Because obviously those would be ideal countries for any Hong Kong movie. I mean, fucking hell, I mean, I've talked about the last movies watch podcast, these two early John Woo movies, which are owned by Fortune Star, but when released in France by the Christophe Gans label, they remastered them. Early John Woo bashers. So, you know,
which ones were those?
The Young Dragons and the Dragon Tamers.
I thought it was going to be Young Dragons.
Yeah,
I've been wanting to see that film for a while.
It's actually on the Hong Kong DVD. Don't see it on VCD. It's actually very crudely cut. A lot of fights are cut. The DVD in Hong Kong has all the fights, but it's missing a rape scene, which isn't a huge loss. But it's the same quality as these Legendary Collection DVDs, which is for the price okay. So you know, pick it up on Hong Kong DVD to see the fights now in full length. They were like one minute like cut out of various fights, just entire chunks, you know. Not small snippets, just entire chunks of stuff. It's good, and Dragon Tamers is not out on DVD in Hong Kong. It's a fun little movie, and it's all right. Shot in Korea, nonetheless. It's got boobies. Mud wrestling in slow motion. Dirty opening credits. And boobies.
Sold.
Directed by John Woo. But you know what? Going slightly back to the whole Young and Dangerous thing. Maybe a box would be suitably filled up if you had Young and Dangerous on all the fucking spin-offs. Even the minor spin-offs that only had 0.0001% to do with Young and Dangerous. Like the legendary Taipei.
Street Angels. Yeah. Sexy and Dangerous.
Yeah. That would fill up a box at least to a medium. To the medium level.
I do remember buying a bootleg box set of it as well for eBay. And there's a big box you open up and there's like slip cases, like quality bastards. It had Goodbye Mr. Cool as one of the official sequels, and like, what's got nothing to do with it?
Yeah,
I was never even listed as a spin-off. It was just an Eakin Cheng triad film.
Yeah, a somewhat right, reading Young enough. And Dangerous.
It was, I'm pretty sure the back cover, it had like covers of each DVD, and it was all like the Maya covers, because that was the DVDs nonetheless. Yeah. So it had that Chinese text for like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then there was a space, and they just filled that space with another DVD artwork, but there was nothing there. Well, it wasn't DVD artwork there, it was just a picture of Eakin Cheng without a t-shirt on, like he was in jeans oiled up. Like they just filled the gap and says, right, he's a topless picture of Eakin.
He did a Donnie.
Mm-hmm. It's like, that'll fill a gap. They're like, okay,
well, I think that's the capper on the conversation.
Eakin Cheng shirtless, I guess that cap can cap a conversation.
It's a closer, that's what they call that.
Look up that pick and we'll use it as a in the show poster. You still have that box set.
Look up that pick. It's probably Stu's screensaver.
It's bookmarked.
He's animated it himself. Hello, Stu. Hi, Ekin.
Oh.
Like Monty Python style, you know, Terry Gilliam style.
That's just wrong.
You know it's true, Stu.
That's wrong, so wrong.
Yeah.
It's my iPhone wallpaper.
I know, it's so wrong, I know.
So, are we still doing shout-outs and plugs and all that kind of stuff?
If you like, it's not a requirement.
If you have anything to plug.
Yeah.
No.
We'll set us up or me up with the link to that box so we can like plug that, if there's a link available even.
Mm-hmm. Hey, of course, yep. You can buy it on, like, well, it's only available in Singapore. But I might...
Singapore.com then.
Yeah. I might actually... I mean, there's a potential for me to go to Singapore to buy one.
Smuggle out of the country.
Hey, Jen, would you like to see Singapore? For a reason? No reason.
I don't know. Because it's a beautiful, interesting country with a rich heritage.
You want that.
And we need £700.
Yeah, you want that. You want that box, don't you? Yes.
Well, it's down to $880-something, which comes out at about £450.
Jen, wow. We need a kidney.
Who doesn't need a kidney?
We need to lose one.
If I save all my pocket money for half a year, I might be able to afford it.
And maybe that was good.
What kind of pocket money are you getting?
Plenty.
Yeah, apparently.
Also, probably I could sell off
Korea.
All my whatever it takes. I could sell off all my Shaw Brothers DVDs then.
I was going to say that could be the thing that you could sell them just to buy that.
Just keep the Blu-rays, English dubs. All my IVLs would be sold on. Also, although I do have one kind of worry, which is, what's the backup procedure like?
In case
What am I going to, I'd have to buy some massive hard drive to transfer 668, well, supposedly a lot of them HD films onto a hard drive. That wouldn't be feasible. So what's the backup like? If it falters, can I get a replacement from Creative? What goes on?
Again, we're going back to Singapore.
Yeah, you have to save to buy one of those terabyte towers, I guess, or terabyte bricks. I don't know. Whatever it takes, Mike. I mean, so no one's forcing you. It's entirely up to you.
See, it wouldn't even fit in a terabyte, right?
I don't,
you just have to choose your favourites.
Yeah. Choosing between your kids or something?
All 680 of them.
Wong Mei Opera's.
Which one could I afford to lose?
I think they'd get booted first. Love Eternal. Yeah!
That's some singing. Right, by the way. They're actually doing some Shaw Brothers Blu-rays. I can plug a little thing in Hong Kong right now, shortly. Two of those known Wong Mei operas are coming to Hong Kong Blu-ray, The Love Eternal and Kingdom and the Beauty. And hopefully they're actually good Blu-rays, but who knows? Again, with Hong Kong Complex, it might just look like the DVDs. Only worse. It's not equal scale. It's upscale.
Although,
blowing it up.
Celestial did actually do, as we've witnessed before, HD transfers.
Yeah.
So they should be proper HD.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's really random with Celestial because they don't know what they're doing. That's pretty much it. They have a library, but they don't. They're not fans. They're in for the business and not good businessmen, in my opinion. But hopefully that box actually contains, for the majority of the films at least, like good HD transfers for classic movies. Now, if there's not an HD transfer for like How to Pick Girls Up, Wong Jing 80s comedy, you might survive. But, you know, I don't need to necessarily see girls in full HD. They'll still look good. And don't need to see a sweaty Wong Jing or Charlie Cho in HD. Charlie Cho is in a lot of Shaw Brothers movies, actually, but it's the latter day comedies. No, it's not in period movies. So he was slimy lawyers and other characters before becoming Hong Kong cinema's number one perv. found his calling. You know, like we discussed with the actors, you find your role eventually.
I think there's a rule of puff that if we talk for long enough, we'll always come back to Shaw Brothers, Ekin Cheng, and Charlie Cho.
Well, nowadays Charlie Cho, I guess, more than like when we first started. Because all I'm doing right now is Category 3, and you know what? The cat is kind of out of the bag on the forums, but I'll just make it kind of official on this podcast that one of the new shows on the Podcast on Fire Network is something I'd like to call This Week in Sleaze, and it's our Category 3 show, which will be a long running one covering Hong Kong exploitation through history, not just the 90s stuff with Charlie Cho. And it's being co-hosted by someone you'll hear when you hear the show.
Okay. Did I see something called sleazyk.com?
SleazyKVideo.com.
Wasn't I the person who coined the Sleazy K nickname?
Uh-oh.
Should I be getting some residuals or something from this?
No, you shouldn't, because I actually coined it.
When? What?
I have audio proof on... I can't find that podcast in a heartbeat. Do a try, man.
I find that hard to believe. I'm pretty sure I coined the Sleazy K moniker.
We'll see you in whatever court you and I can appear in, like, to, I don't know.
Puff court,
yeah.
I'm your judge.
Yeah, the court of podcasts.
It's somewhere around, like, Podcast on Fire 27 or 8 or something. When you talked about, I know this shit. You talked about me not meeting in Tokyo Go Police, and I introduced myself as Sleazy Ken. You might have said Sleazy K, though. I'll give you.
Yeah, exactly. You can't take credit for that because you used the word sleazy and your own name in a sentence.
But that's not your nickname. Sleazy is the longer word, and I come up with the majority of it.
Sleazy is the longer word.
So there.
It's not going to happen because Ken's editing this show.
Exactly. It's going to come out. Sound like Ken wins.
All right, that'll be it.
You just said it. Ken wins. I'm going to extract that at the end of the conversation. Ken wins.
See, I'm like the little shop that's being bullied by the big business in a good old fashioned 80s family movie. God damn it.
And there's no happy ending.
I'm Danny. Danny LaRusso in your Cobra Kai. God damn it.
So,
well, it's not a successful venture currently. I can say that, though. Mike, Sleazy K video hasn't taken off as such in terms of the site, but the videos are getting spins. But the site is not like expanded into some kind of empire. So, I'm not getting money out of this. So. And you wouldn't really either if you took it over. or actually became the rights holder of it. So we'll see. Maybe I'm kind in the future, and when the money starts rolling in, I'll actually throw you a bone.
Oh well, thanks.
and you better be soon, because you have to afford that box. So Sleazy K video needs to succeed soon, so Mike can afford the box. It's a plan. It's a plan. Maybe not a good plan, but a plan.
And for me, I'll actually take this chance to plug our What's Korean Cinema page on Podcast and Fire. I'm going to put up the full timetable of what movies we plan to discuss on the next 5 shows. I have planned this to be a 6-part series, and of course, deciding on which movie we're going to talk about next is going to be deciding head-to-head public decisions. So our second episode has been decided in the form of Welcome to Dongmak Wall. So go onto podcastandfire.com, I think it is / What's Korean Cinema, and then you'll be able to see what movies we plan to go with next and when the polls will go online for you to vote. So if you like the show, you know what movies you want us to talk about, it's up to you to vote. But generally, they're all ones that I love.
Yeah, I've said it before. I enjoyed a hell of the first episode we did. And in my world, I would have liked it to be purely Stu's choices. Coming from him, I want to talk about the movies I love. But it's a good idea still to involve the public. But I like the idea of the show being something of a labor of love of Stu's. And the first show really shows that. I'll say this. Okay, maybe What's Korean Cinema has come out by the time people listen to this, but regardless, Stu is on fire on that show. The passion really shines through. That's what I took away from that show. So,
and one of the good things about all the movies we're choosing, that we're bringing up to the public, I all love equally anyway. So it's still win-win.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not what we're going to somehow end up with. Teenage Killer became a hook, I was going to say a hooking machine. Teenage Hooker became a killing machine. Not Teenage Killer became a hooking machine, no.
A whoring machine.
Mm-hmm. And right away, that's Japanese, but he was obviously drinking and he made that list.
What's a really hated Korean movie that...
I've not really came across any.
I mean, it would be such a great example of, no, I love this movie, we're going to discuss that on the show. What's a really detested Korean movie? Natural City, a sci-fi movie?
Yeah, that was boring. I bought that, watched it, and sold it, but I was merely boring. It wasn't so bad it hurts. Really, chewing on glass would have been so much more fun.
2 hours off some Blade Runner imitation. Maybe. Mm-hmm.
So it's mostly that, and there's some films I've watched once and I'll probably never want to watch again. like, what was it? Was it Letters That Came From Mars or The Man Who Came From Mars? Was just, I bought like a cheap Hong Kong DVD of that just because I had to. Like, it was another one of those Yes Asia popcorn deals, like, come on, one more disc.
And
we'll knock
more,
a dollar
one
off.
More, one more, one more. You know, they can, they add deals upon deals.
Yeah, they win.
Just when you're about to check out, there's more chocolates.
But, that's me.
Can you think of any, like, hated Korean movie as such, Mike, just off the top of your head?
I was trying to think of one, but nothing's coming to mind.
Oh.
But the thing is, in things we're likely to hear about or cop on DVD are going to be the good ones, or at least critically acclaimed, or, you know, they've got a bit of a reputation.
Yeah.
And Korea, unlike old school kind of Hong Kong, or maybe current Hong Kong stuff, and Japan, don't quite go in for as much of the exploitation-y kind of thing.
Oh.
Which is usually where you get your terrible, terrible films from.
Food for thought, I guess.
Mm-hmm. If you know any like, hated Korean films, tweet us. Or drop a message on our Facebook wall.
Goody.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to you, Martin. You have to know at least one. Aye.
We've like changed hosting duties all throughout the show. So who wants to end the show? What would you like to, do you like to end a show?
Yeah, right. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mike.
See you next year.
Talking to the audience, not you, Ken.
Goodbye, Mike.
He's waving to the monitor. But yeah, there we go.
Goodbye, Stu. It's good that you have me. Well, we're back. So essentially, Mike, Stu is going to do it. Are you able to do a last movies watch from where you're sitting, Stu?
I'm going to be in the room now. Hey, you're not allowed to talk. Do I say hello?
Hello.
Tell us your...
That's quality podcasting, that. I like this guy.
No, not Charlie Cho. Okay, that's enough for you.
Charlie Cho is a good man, little
boy. No, that's enough for him.
You will like Charlie Cho when you grow up.
I'm getting abused from there.